It's the Popmatic Podcast for July 27th, 2016. We're opening our hearts and our third eyes this week.
All matter is merely energy condensed to a slow vibration that we are all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. There is no such thing as death. Life is only a dream. And we are the imagination of ourselves.
Coming to you from the space between two deep cleansing breaths, this is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Jeremy, and joining me today are...
Bill, I found God.
Amanda.
I am God.
An evil robot.
All right. Summer Challenge is still going on. Can you believe it? It runs until August 13th, so there's still time to sign up at any library location or on our website. Again, here's what you got to do. Read 10 hours. I got it right this time. And you get a prize and get entered to win... the grand prize. This is week three of our summer challenge series, where we're exploring four different aspects of wellness. Last time we talked about mental wellness, but it was really more about mental illness. And now we're leaving this mortal coil to explore other planes of being with spiritual wellness. And how are we differentiating between mental and spiritual health? Maybe you guys can chime in. I think mental health is centered on the brain. And spiritual health is centered maybe on the third eye, which I referenced earlier, or your heart, or something else. Make any
your
sense?
Soul.
Doesn't have to make sense because it's personal.
That got rowdy.
Yeah. Personal.
Silly humans, you don't have souls.
Okay.
I like Evil Robot. He's fun.
Amanda.
Yes, Jeremy.
Would you bless us with some talking?
Should we all hold hands?
Whatever.
Hum kumbaya. So being an artist can be hard. I think it can be hard. It's hard enough to find your style or discover your sound, but then people want you to write about it. Like bearing your soul on stage every night in front of thousands of screaming fans isn't hard enough. Although, you know, to be fair, if they're screaming at / with you, they probably don't care if you're a little flat on the bridge when you sing. So as a race of people, human beings are always looking for something deeper and more meaningful. And outside of, you know, the church, in capital letters, I would argue that musicians are the folks we often look to help us find peace, love, and the best party. So spiritual wellness can mean so many different things to so many different people, and it can often be challenging to codify. So it took Sarah Bareilles over 2 years to write her recent memoir, Sounds Like Me. Because, like most highly creative right-brain people, myself included, she found it difficult to start. But once she figured out how to incorporate her music into her writing, things started flowing nicely. So Sounds Like Me focuses on 8 of Sarah's songs, including Love Song, Red, and of course her big hit, Brave. Sarah not only tells the story of how the song came to exist, but she also shares her emotional journey. She struggled at first with finding her voice, and it took her quite a bit of time to be confident enough in herself to be honest in her music. And this is something that can be particularly challenging for singer-songwriter types because so much of their material is personal. And this, in combination with perfectionistic tendencies, can be a recipe for disaster. When Sarah was working on her latest album, a friend sent her this quote from Martha Graham. No artist is pleased. There is no satisfaction whatever at any time. There is only a queer, divine dissatisfaction, a blessed unrest that keeps us marching and makes us more alive than the others. And this is where Sarah got the title for her latest album, which she called The Blessed Unrest. Now, the library has this album on Freegal, along with her other music, including the musical adaptation of The Waitress that she has been recently working on, in addition to the book Sounds Like Me. Now, spiritual wellness can be hard to find and even harder to hold on to. But when you find what works for you, you got to crank it up, baby.
Turn it up.
Bill?
Today's topic is spiritual, and I have decided to take the word spirit, which also means distilled beverage, liquor, hard liquor, or hard alcohol. And examples are vodka, gin, rum, whiskey. This brings me to the topic of today's podcast, Elwood P. Dowd, a pleasant fellow who likes to spend his free time at a local bar drinking with his best friend, Harvey. Now, for those who don't know Harvey, well, he's a 6'3" and 1/2 inch tall puka. A puka is a from Celtic mythology, a fairy spirit. In an animal form, always very large, the puka appears here and there, now and then, to this one and that one, a benign but mischievous creature, very fond of rum pots and crack pots. Harvey, in the movie and play, is a rabbit. Let me start at the beginning. Harvey is a play written by Mary Chase. It opened on Broadway in 1944, won the Pulitzer Prize, becoming one of the longest-running Broadway plays ever, running 1,775 performances. In 2012, there was a revival of the play starring Jim Parsons of The Big Bang Theory. The Harvey I want to talk about is the 1950 film version, starring James Stewart as Elwood P. Dowd. To me, the movie and the play is somewhat subversive because it takes the side of Elwood P. Dowd, a man who is probably a functioning alcoholic and could be somewhat mentally unwell. But we of the audience find his world more attractive and more to our liking than his sister, who lives in a part of the so-called normal world. By the way, Elwood P. Dowd's sister is played by Josephine Hull. She's great. She won an Oscar. She well-deserved. She literally sells the movie. All I can say is check out Harvey and see it for yourself. You'll be wildly entertained. Jeremy?
I was struggling. I had a dark night of the soul when I was trying to come up with a topic for this. And then Bill said, well, I'm going to talk about spirits, booze. And I thought, oh, that's perfect. That's you, you brilliant man. So I piggybacked.
Thank you.
I piggybacked on his idea. And remembered something to talk about, which is a book. Which is a book called Iron Man, Demon in a Bottle. Addiction is a spiritual disease as much as it is a mental one, and it's the same whether it applies to drugs, alcohol, food, shopping, or Pokemon. And you can read about it in all kinds of books, and I like to read about comic books. So in this book, it's by David Michelinie, Bob Layton, and John Romita Jr. Tony Stark drinks a lot, which causes him to make mistakes in his superhero life, which causes him to feel guilty, which causes him to drink some more. And then eventually he gets angry at the Avengers butler Jarvis and makes Jarvis retire. And then he gets clean eventually. So Tony Stark, also known as Iron Man, was originally modeled on Howard Hughes, minus the long fingernails and jars of urine. And after he was injured in a communist booby trap and taken prisoner, his life was saved by this magnetic chest plate that was invented by a fellow prisoner named Ho Jensen. That's the glowing thing in his chest that you see in all the movies, and it keeps him alive. That's kind of a serious issue for anyone, superhero or otherwise, and the idea of not being able to survive without advanced machinery can kind of get you into some what does it all mean territory. But this was kind of a occasional crutch for Iron Man storytellers until 1979, when Tony Stark's alcoholism became part of the canon. Now, it's not clear if he is a member of any 12-step program, so as far as we know, the Avengers is the only A in his life. This was 1979, late 70s, early 80s. This was an era in popular culture when there was a lot of, or the beginning of some very painfully sincere stories, particularly on television. I remember an episode of Family Ties where Tom Hanks plays an uncle, an alcoholic uncle, and he's like sneaking booze around, and he's drinking vanilla extract and all this stuff, and like he's like crying at a table. And later on in that series, also Michael J. Fox's character gets hooked on diet pills so he can stay awake to study. Now, sincerity like that, these sort of like awe, very special episode moments, that's very rare these days, of course. And the Iron Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is there's none of that sort of like, well, look, he's drinking again. There's none of that.
Not yet.
Yeah, I guess there's time. He's portrayed only as a dashing playboy, and he has a drink in his hand, but he's not the bleary-eyed wreck staring at himself in the mirror that we see in Bob Layton's classic cover to Iron Man number 128. Making superheroes flawed is what sort of made Marvel Comics what it is today. Back in the 60s, they did that. Instead of being a bunch of flying Boy Scouts or deputized vigilantes like from their distinguished competition, Marvel heroes were practically victims of their power. Bruce Banner's life was ruined by his anger and transformation to the Hulk, and Peter Parker learned the hard way about what comes with great power. And then flaws in characters like Iron Man sort of imbues them with a human spirit that I think is part of the reason why they endure to this day. Speaking of human spirits, we have a special transhuman guest on the show today.
Though I am an evil robot, I do have real-life human heroes, and one is Karen Sandler, who ironically, in real life, has a piece of technology in her chest, in this case, a defibrillator? Very hard for an evil robot to say. And one of the reasons why Karen Sandler is Evil Robot's hero is that she is a free software advocate who's dedicated her life to spreading the word about free software. And there's a certain irony that she has a piece of technology in her chest and the software inside of it, even though it is, it maintains her life, she cannot know anything about what the software is or how it works. And it's the same with many people who have electronic devices in their body. And she's fought hard to change that. Karen Sandler, an amazing person who's done many good things in the world. Now, back to the matter at hand. Because I'm an evil robot, I do not believe you silly humans have souls, but I must perform my functions as programmed. So today I will feature music, which will induce in silly humans a spiritual mode, or possibly aid in the practice of meditation, which, according to your painfully disorganized and incomplete information database, known as Wikipedia, is a component of many of your human religions. Meditation can lower your blood pressure and ease anxiety, so evil robot, keep referring to myself in third person, that's so terrible, could have just as easily pitched this one during the physical wellness episode or the mental wellness episode, but I am not here to talk about meditation, I'm here to talk about music, and I want to talk about the music of pianist composer Harold Budd. In particular, two albums which he did in collaboration with Brian Eno in the early 80s, Plateau of Mirror and The Pearl. First, Plateau of Mirror, high atop a plateau of mirror. Think about that for a bit. High up there with the hiss, that's where all the magic is. Oh, I'm rhapsodizing again. Stay focused. These are Budd's minimalist piano compositions, or in this case, improvisations, which Eno then treats with electronic effects. The overall effect is maximum chillax. Let's take a listen to the first track, appropriately called First Light. Eno had so much fun on that first record, they said, hey, let's do this again, like silly humans often do. This time they made a record called The Pearl. And robots gotta tell you, they don't mean a pearl as in a necklace, they mean the pearl of your mind. Sure. So, what's The Pearl all about? It's more of the same, which is to say, deep space, haze, keyboard tinklings with crickets in the background. Ned Raggett of the All Music Guide says, The Pearl is as serene a piece of music as was ever recorded, which is an idiotic and meaningless thing to say. But vapid rhapsodizing cannot take away from how beautiful this music is. For instance, the track Foreshadowed. Thank you.
Can we change the name of the show to Vapid Rhapsodizing?
If there is a difference between Plateau of Mirror and The Pearl, it is that Plateau of Mirror is a little bit more dissonant. Sure enough, is often perceived more as an Eno album than a Bud album, and the one big criticism of Eno is that he's overly concerned with gizmos and effects as opposed to, you know, music. And The Pearl is a lot more precise. It kind of focuses on the melodies that Bud has created. Now, the library has The Pearl on Hoopla, and because Eno is more famous, we have Plateau of Mirror on Hoopla and compact disc. I recommend it for anyone who's into Eric Satie, Max Richter, or Aphex Twin. Now, if you're the kind of robot that likes to lubricate your joints and then journey out on a Plateau of Mirror in search of The Pearl, just remember that he is the herald of the bud, and you'd be reminded how silly humans really are.
Thank you, evil robot.
Hey, guys.
What's up, Jamie?
Hi, Jeremy.
How you doing? What do we do on the Tickle My Fancy segment of the program?
Well,
maybe the library has it.
Maybe the library doesn't.
But either way,
it's tickling our fancy.
Jeremy?
Hey.
Oh, you get to go first.
Ooh, nice.
No, that was good.
I think we should all take turns.
I'm waiting for your Tickle My Fancy song to be done.
Yeah, it's not coming along. Tickling My Fancy is a podcast called the Comedy Bang Bang podcast. I've seen this show. There's a show on IFC. I've seen it on Netflix, and I really enjoyed it. And I was telling my friend about it, and he said, "Oh, the podcast is much better." And that, you know, when someone's like, "Oh, I like this better," like, it's sort of off-putting. But he was absolutely right. So I'm sorry that I thought you sounded douchey when you said that. It's hosted by Scott Aukerman, and it features lots of comedians, actors, and stuff. A lot of times, it'll be like an interview with someone, like Dana Carvey was on one, and then they will, then characters will come in, and then they'll interview these characters. Like, I listened to one where Paul F. Tompkins played both Alan Thicke and Gary Marshall, but Gary Marshall had been banished to another dimension, and he came back, and so like they were talking, and then but they were talking to two real life people. And anyway, it's a really good show. It's all improvised and is very funny. It features people like Paul F. Tompkins, Thomas Middleditch, who's on Silicon Valley, Lauren Lapkus, who is on Orange is the New Black, and it's good.
Bill? This is more of a tribute than a Tickle My Fancy. On June 23rd, 2016, Michael Herr passed away. He was an American writer, war correspondent, and screenwriter. He wrote the narration for Apocalypse Now and co-wrote the screenplay to Full Metal Jacket, both movies we have in our collection. What I want to talk about is Dispatches. This is Michael Herr's memoir of his time as a correspondent in the Vietnam War. Dispatches has been called the best novel about the Vietnam War ever written. Having said that, you can buy Dispatches by Michael Herr on Hoopla. And just this one other thing, he was on the Dick Cavett Show in the early 80s years ago. And for some reason, I was expecting this Hemingway-esque type character to come out and talk. But here in come out this very mild college professor. He was very engrossing, but yet I couldn't connect the two to the Vietnam War and him. He kind of blew my mind. Anyway, I just highly recommend Dispatches. John le Carré is a big fan of the book, so that's who I'm paying tribute to, Michael Herr.
I didn't read Dispatches, but a couple years ago I watched Full Metal Jacket and read The Short Timers by Gustav
Hosford.
And then someone was telling me that they had read Dispatches, and I was like, you should read Dispatches, and I just haven't gotten around to it yet, but... Because when I was really little, I was really fascinated by Vietnam, and I didn't really follow through with that as a serious adult, because I never quite became a serious adult. But I still would like to read that book.
Amanda.
Okay, so sometimes you just have to rock out. And I wish that Mike was here today because he would totally rock out with me.
Yeah.
So.
Two house.
He's probably rocking out as we speak. So, you know, when you have a bad day or get stuck in traffic that's going nowhere fast, blasting loud, angry music can really be cathartic. Much more than, say, hitting the jerk in front of you who's changed lanes 4 times in the last 3 minutes, even though he's only moved 2 inches. So, now, okay, I know that I seem like the person on the podcast most likely to crank up Taylor Swift and jam out. But I actually enjoy rock music way more than Tay-Tay. So, when the right mood strikes me, I love to crank it up to the appropriate volume and let the big angry sound wash over me and block out the rest of the world. So, I have to admit that I'm pretty picky about my rock selections, though. I've mentioned before that I really want decent lyrics more than just don't growl or scream at me. That's not helpful. So some of that is enjoyable.
It's not helpful.
It just makes me madder. But I want words at some point. I also want more than just 2 chords. And if the guitars go off on a 19-minute stupid solo that a second grader could play, I'm so done. I'm like, I can do that. Stop.
That's the only kind of solo I know how to play.
Point taken. So, now, that said, there are several bands in this category that tickle my fancy, and one of them is Drowning Pool.
Whoa. You let the bodies hit the floor?
Bodies hit the floor. Whoa. Yes. Here we go. Now, 1, nothing wrong with me. 2, nothing wrong with me. 3, nothing wrong with me. 4, nothing wrong with me. 1, something's got to give. 2, something's got to give. 3, something's got to give. Them though. I love their album Sinner, which was released in 2002, and I love blasting this album in my car, which I only get to do when I'm alone because my husband kind of hates loud rock music. he likes it, but it has to be softer, and it's not the appropriate volume. So this album features the song Bodies, which we just mentioned, as well as other favorites like Sinner or I Am. Now, unfortunately, lead singer and lyricist Dave Williams passed away in 2002, right after the album was released, really? From the very unrock and roll cause of cardiomyopathy. So since then, the band has gone through a few lineup adjustments. I know, like, why couldn't he fall off a building because he was drunk or, you know.
What a wuss.
I know, stupid health scare. So anyway, so I recently just discovered that their new album is out. It's called Hallelujah. That's with an E, not an A. Now, while Sinner went platinum the same year it was released, the new album hasn't quite had as much buzz. The band still sounds great, but I'm not as big a fan of this songs on the new album. You can tell they have a different songwriter, and there's a little bit more "Hail Satan" than I care for, which Mike would probably like. So maybe he should.
Yeah,
he'd be in. So, you know, especially in the song that's called "We Are the Devil and the World Is Hell." So, and that's not maybe the best one to drive in traffic to.
We are the devil
and the world is hell.
So yes, we are the devil.
The world is hell. Yes, exactly. So now the library has both of these records since we've sold them to you so well. They are on Hoopla. You can check them out. And now that the weather has finally decided to warm up, you can check it out, crank it up, and we'll go cruising together. Maybe it will help the whole driving in traffic thing because we can have Nashville traffic dance party.
That fit in today's theme very well.
I was trying to stay in the theme. So, cathartic. Evil robot.
Wasn't there certain Gnostic philosophers that felt like the earth itself was ruled by demigod and that humans thought they were worshiping God, but actually they were actually worshiping a demon?
I think I've heard that.
Silly philosophers. silly humans and your ideas. Hallelujah indeed. My notes for Tickle My Fancy this week just say Alan Vega. Thought says, you want me to keep going about that?
He was
the lead singer of the band Suicide. So who were the band Suicide? They were like a proto-punk synthesizer duo. So like punk rock, but with a synthesizer. So they'd be on stage, just be two dudes. Mark Rev with the little keyboard and Alan Vega. Before this was cool. Like this was not cool at all. Everyone was playing like rock and roll, or it was like, you know, like funk or like big shows, 10 guitars, all that, whatever you're into. These guys were super minimal. This is before punk rock, even though they described themselves as punk and wore leather jackets. They totally defined the punk style in New York in the 70s, even like before the Ramones hit. And what's interesting is that the music was like minimalist, ugly synthesizer music. It's basically like any electronic music that's intention was to be like nasty or dirty or mean, like comes from Suicide. So basically my whole record collection. But Vega as a vocalist had this, just this uncompromising style. He kind of had this sort of like evil Elvis persona, like mean criminal rock and roll greaser kind of persona. And he would just like tell stories about living in New York when it was very pre-gentrified, you know, like grimy, dirty stories about street life in New York. And he was always like hostile to the audience. And it was just like, there's all these like performance art pieces where he would do these all like stripped down, like anti-music rockabilly songs. And he's almost like testing the audience to hate him. And then he would get into it with the audience, fight with them, just with his body language. It was like, there's ever you want an example of like an uncompromising artist with Alan Vega. And he would like sort of scat, but instead of like scatting melodies, it always be like these like yarls and yips and grunts. Like he didn't want to be on stage, but he was like being forced to by a demigod or something. Like
an evil just robot.
He was an interesting dude, and you know, he was 78 when he died, and as far as everyone knows, he dies peacefully. For a long time, he lied about his age. So before this whole like punk rock thing ever happened, he had been an artist for a number of years in New York City, a radical artist who like was part of these all these radical art actions. At one point, they even barricaded the doors of the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. Like this is like before you know, punk rock existed as a thing. So like I wonder like now like what he even thought about that when that happened and New York became a nexus, because when that all happened, like, he was an adult. He was, like, middle-aged by the time that happened. And it's come out now that he lied about his background and he lied about how old he was. Just because, you know, his whole persona and everything with the leather jackets and the snarling was, like, all part of this character that he had created called Alan Vega. So, besides how influential Suicide was with their sound, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting retroactive writing and scholarship about his life and work. He was also a sculptor. He did a lot of like light sculptures at the time, and then later he made a lot of work out of like junk and garbage art. That was always like part of his persona. So it'll be interesting to see what interesting writing comes about Alan Vega in the future. But in the meantime, all of Suicide's discography is on Hoopla, and all of his solo albums, or most of them, are on Hoopla. This is a very interesting collaboration album with him and Alex Chilton is on Freegal. Why?
Yeah, another day. Yeah, Lord.
It seems strange, but I always kind of, for me, even though I really like the work of Alex, I mean, I really like the work of Alan Vega and don't like the work of Alex Chilton. They're always like paralleled in my mind. It's like two lead singers of super hype, really influential bands who like never got enough credit and then always struggled. But then the thing about Vega though that has me like thinking though is like, well, maybe that was just his persona. Like, I don't know. Like, he's like always gave interviews how he was always poor no matter what, even the whole way through his life, even though he had toured the world and like had record deals and whatnot. So maybe that was all just a put on. I don't know. Alan Vega, check him out. We'll be right back.
corrections. Does anybody have any corrections?
I would like to share a personal victory.
Do it. PV.
So I finally finished reading the Alan Turing book I mentioned like a year and a half ago.
new rule. I always say stuff like that when I take a drink of coffee.
Okay, well, that's awesome. I'll work on it. But okay, so I have to admit, though, that I don't have a background in Boolean algebra or algebraic topology, so I completely didn't understand most of the math in the book. But I thought, when it finally started talking about him and not, like, all the math, I don't want to say math crap, but math crap. The personal parts were really good. So I would say if you want to find out how computers were made, go get an advanced math degree and then pick up. The book is actually called Alan Turing, The Enigma. You know, it's a breeze. It's 768 pages of math fun.
What I love is that you've probably read, like, five times that amount in
other
the time.
Stuff. Yeah, so well, because it was exciting and I cared about it. But, you know, or you could just watch the movie, which was The Imitation Game, and, you know, then get on with your life.
Yes.
So I did it.
That's.
I told you I would.
That's incredible. I like that you've been keeping us up to date on that.
I don't know how many times I had to check it in and turn it back in and check it out and turn it back in.
That's
but
beautiful. Well, good job not letting it be billed to you.
That's
and
well,
then getting a collection.
I work here. I know how.
Sorry. I neglected to mention that the narrator who I was saying good job to of The Killer Inside Me by Jim Thompson of the audio version was Kevin T. Collins. He did a good job. I saw his picture and I was like, I don't like this guy because that's the kind of person I am. But then I was wrong about him. So sorry, Kevin. Also, the music that you heard at the beginning of last week's episode was the Suicidal Tendencies song Institutionalized, which you can find on their self-titled album on Hoopla.
What was the Pepsi song? Like, what is that from?
That's from that song.
That's from that song.
That's what the end piece thing. My joke failed. For more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org. Wait for it.
.org. Yeah, and our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Also,
the show was edited by an evil robot.
You can subscribe to the Pop Mega Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Please do it. Please.
It's fun. I did it this morning.
It'll make your week. 7 days without the Pop-matic Podcast makes 1 week.
Yes, these things always work out just the way Harvey says they will. It's very, very versatile. Did I tell you he could stop clocks?
To what purpose?
Well, you've heard the expression, his face will stop a clock. Well, Harvey can look at your clock and stop it. And you can go anywhere you like, with anyone you like, and stay as long as you like, and when you get back, not 1 minute will have ticked by.